25.
Ches Kislev, Friday the 20th of November, Rabbi Akiva Tatz, The Problem with Beauty. And next week's Torah Away will be in Machazikei Hadas.
First of all, just like to say a personal tribute to the people who arranged this daily session, Mr. Itzkovitz, anyone else who's involved. It's an amazing record, I think, to have been going for years and provide something every morning. It's good for the speakers, usually, and good for the listeners, sometimes. I think we owe them a tribute and gratitude. One of the serious problems, most difficult problems in Torah, is the problem of beauty and woman's beauty. Right? In this week's Parsha, I was asked to say something about the Parsha. In this week's Parsha, it tells us that Rachel was beautiful, and that is very problematic. Very problematic. First of all, there doesn't seem to be any purpose to it at all. Not like in the previous Parshas where we learned that Sarah was beautiful, and we learned they were beautiful. There was a consequence because she was beautiful. Paroi took her, Avimelech took her. There were issues. So at least there's some reason that you need to know about a woman's beauty. But in this week's parasha, you see clearly the Torah is praising beauty with no obvious reason, no connection to the story, no obvious reason. In fact, if you had to put a reason to it, it seems to be it influenced her selection as a wife. The Torah is makpid to tell us about beauty, and in particular woman's beauty, and that is very problematic. Very problematic. Why would it be important to know that a woman is beautiful? Right? Why is that a characteristic of somebody of spiritual greatness? If you are speaking to your local shul committee, and the committee tells you they're looking for a rabbi, but the most important thing is that the Rebbetzin has to be good looking, you know, I mean, you'd have serious doubts about the affiliation of that. So, why is the Torah telling us that's women beautiful? And the Torah makes a great fuss about it, and Chazal tell us that Sarah's beauty was Ka'ein, the beauty of Chava, she was incredibly beautiful. The Imaris were all extremely beautiful. The Ramban, talking about Hanukkah, the Ramban says that Dina was exquisite. And the only reason the Torah doesn't tell you that she was so beautiful is because it led to trouble. In the case of the other great women who were beautiful, they were abducted, but they came out okay, unscathed. And in Dina's case, not the case, she was molested. And therefore the Torah doesn't make a point of telling you, it avoids explicitly saying that she was beautiful, but in fact, she was. In fact, the Ramban goes on to say that the incident of Dina is the presaging incident in Torah for Hanukkah. There's no time to go into that fully now, but as he explains, the Rambam says that the problem with the Greeks was they were totally into beauty. Pashtu yodeim, he says, bivnoiseim. They stretched out their hand to Jewish women, and the whole issue, one of the issues with Greece, as we try to understand more deeply, Greece was into the world of aesthetics. They were looking for beauty, and they attacked Jewish women, and in fact, they were avenged by a small group, of Hashmonaim. And that's exactly what, if you think about it, what happened with Dina. She was abducted by Shechem, the many connections between Shechem and Shechem ben Hamor, without going into all the details. But he took Dina, and she was avenged by a small group. She was avenged by just a minority of the Shvatim who went in and rescued her. There's many, many connections here. Greece, it has to be understood that part of the battle we have at Hanukkah with the Greeks is exactly the debate over beauty. The Greeks played their games naked, right? They wanted to expose the beauty of the body. That was very much part of Greek philosophy. Greek philosophy and Greek culture was the notion that you must have a beautiful vessel to contain a beautiful content, right? The moral they had was beautiful mind and a beautiful body. And that's why the games were played naked. In fact, the Hellenists of that day had themselves uncircumcised so that they could take part in the Greek games. Part of the Greek games was part of Greece was its incredibly developed philosophy, but also the demonstration of the fact that that philosophy has to house a body that is very beautiful, that's very athletic and very highly trained and skilled and very aesthetically beautiful. That was the issue. And this is echoed in Torah by beauty, the Kohanim, the ones who are the nemesis of Greece, are also presented beautifully. The Kohen Gadol Tiferes, right? The Kohen Gadol has to be presented in beautiful clothing and external beauty. There's a whole sugya here of beauty. But the central question is that you see that the Torah is very particular to tell us about the beauty of its great women, and that is problematic. Not only that, but even a man, Yosef, the Torah describes as having a woman's beauty. Why is that positive? Bad enough that we have to hear about our great foremothers who were extremely beautiful. That's problematic enough, enigmatic enough. But to hear that Yosef is extremely beautiful. In Tanakh you also have people like Avshalom, perhaps one or two others who are extremely beautiful. Why is it a compliment of Yosef that he's been described as having a woman's beauty? What does that mean? And you see the Torah is telling us in great detail about the beauty of the great women of Jewish history. That is extremely problematic. When you're talking about spiritual qualities, it would seem completely out of place to tell us that they were beautiful. You know, when I present this subject sometimes in the Beis Yaakov environment, the girls look at me with real concern. They say, "Rabbi, you don't understand. The Torah is talking about spiritual beauty. The Torah doesn't mean physical beauty. The Torah is talking about spiritual beauty." That's completely wrong. That's completely wrong. The Egyptians took Sarah, right? The Egyptians were not looking for rabbits and material, I can assure you. The midstream were not looking for spiritual beauty. That was not their issue. Right? They were ready to kill for physical, sensual beauty. Sarah must have been stunning in terms of Egyptian eyes. So the Torah is clearly telling us that these women were beautiful in a way that was very potentially provocative. Of course, yeah. What is it? Not only that, but the same Torah that praises our great women's beauty tells us that beauty is a problem. The same Torah tells you that's problematic. Sheker achein vehevel ayefi. The Torah tells us. The same Torah. The Torah that praises our great women's beauty is the same Torah that tells us, al tistakel bekankan, don't look at the vessel, look at the content. Don't judge a book by its cover, as they say. That is only misleading. Look at the content. And therefore, sheker achein vehevel ayefi. You know, in the yeshiva world today, when you propose a shidduch to a young man, you tell him about the girl. One of the issues is whether she's good looking. It's not frum to say that. So if she's very good looking, you say she's got lots of sheker and hevel. That's what you say. Then he gets the message, you know, and then he gets the message, right? He's looking for somebody with a lot of sheker and hevel. But the point is the Torah calls beauty sheker and hevel. It's lies and frivolity. It's emptiness. If it's sheker and frivolity and emptiness, then why is it important to know that Sarah was good looking? What could be a bigger insult? The perish of beauty is sheker and hevel. And then the Torah tells you that Sarah and Rivka and Rachel were extremely beautiful. Leah was beautiful. She had something with her eyes. So doesn't talk about it in the same terms. But what is going on? Not only that, but the sugya and the Gemara that teaches us about beauty makes it extremely clear that external beauty is very problematic. The Gemara says that Rabbi Shur ben Hananya, was the leading sage of his day. Chakima de Yudoi, the great sage of the Mishnaic period in which he lived. And it so happened that he was extremely ugly. He was so ugly that people weren't even ashamed to ask him about his ugliness. Ironically, his body was formed. Rabbi Itzkowitz, before you came in, we thanked you. The Rabbi Shur ben Hananya, ironically, his body was formed by the sounds of Torah. The Mishnah says his mother used to wheel his baby, his crib used to put him into buggy. Prams. Used to put him into the Beis Medrash. His ears should be formed by the sound of Torah. And the child formed by the sounds of Torah turned out to be very ugly. So Gemara says one day he met the Roman governor's daughter, the Caesar's daughter, and she was struck by his ugliness, and he was famed for his wisdom. So she said to him, how could such great wisdom, such beautiful wisdom, be contained in such an ugly vessel? Ey chochma mefu'eres. How could such beauty be contained in a vessel that is so broken? Right? Now, it's very interesting, before we hear his answer, it's very interesting to know that this question came from a woman and a Roman woman. Right? What is the meaning of that? It's a woman who understands aesthetics. Women are the place of beauty. Women understand aesthetic beauty. This is an output of the Midah of Bina. No time now to go into that, but that's what it is. And women know how to dispose things in a beautiful way. Men can be very organized, but not beautiful. Right? If you've ever had the experience of living in a military camp where there's men only and no women, you know that things are meticulously neat, but deadly, terrible. It looks like nothing on earth. But you let a woman loose for an hour or two, things start to look like something, right? It's nice how to make things beautiful. Women are the locus of beauty. And therefore it's a woman who's struck by the discrepancy. By the way, this is an old debate in the art world. In the world of art, an ancient debate is, does a beautiful painting deserve a beautiful frame, or does a beautiful painting need a simple frame? Is it a simple frame that sets off the beauty of the painting because it doesn't detract from the... Or does a beautiful painting need a beautiful frame to honor and dignify? And if someone buys a new painting and they say, what do you think of my new painting? And you look at it and you say, it's got a beautiful frame. A bit of a problematic compliment, that. But this is an old issue in the world of art, and a woman is the one who understands beauty, and secondly, she's a Roman woman, and that's very significant because Rome was the culture of Greece. Rome was not a culture of its own. Rome was the mighty empire that spread Greek values around the world, and of course we live in it today. Nothing could be more relevant to us than this debate about beauty, because we are the product, we are a Greek culture, right? Rome spread Greece around the world, and today there's nothing in Western society that's not Greek. In Western society, all our cultural structures are Greek. All political structures are Greek. All our philosophy is based on Greek philosophy. All our notions of Western aesthetics are Greek. We live in a culture fundamentally based on Greece and its values. The Hanukkah debate is very much alive today. And so a woman representing the idea of beauty and representing the Greek notion of a beautiful mind in a beautiful body, she says to the rabbi, how can there be such incredibly famous and beautiful wisdom in such an ugly vessel? That doesn't make sense. Right? Her theory was that a beautiful mind needs a beautiful body. So the rabbi said to her, Rabbi Shimon ben Chananya said to her, what does your father keep his wine in? So she said, like everyone, he keeps his wine in earthenware vessels, right? The clay amphora that they use, the glazed earthenware vessels, that's what he keeps his wine in. So he said to her, but surely your father as a royal figure, surely you should keep his wine in gold and silver, the best of vessels. So she thought that was a good idea. The Gemara says she went back home, and in the father's wine cellars, she had all the wine put into gold and silver. When you put wine into metal vessels, it goes off. The wine interacts, the alcohol interacts with the metal, and the wine was ruined. So when they served the wine at Caesar's table, and the wine was all off, he said, what's going on? So she said, the Jew told me to do this. So he called him Shimon ben Chananya, and he said to him, Rabbi, what's going on? So he said, I showed your daughter that when you put beautiful content into a beautiful vessel, and the vessel makes much of itself, it ruins the content. When you have a vessel that does more than simply contain, if a vessel is utterly simple, it is only the cheapest and simplest of material, and it loyally contains, then it preserves loyally the content. But when you put something beautiful into a vessel that is making its own contribution, then it ruins the content. And therefore, I try to explain to her, the reason I'm wise is because of my ugliness. Had I been blessed with a beautiful, cursed with a beautiful body, I wouldn't have achieved this wisdom. Now, she wasn't moved by that answer. She wasn't convinced by that answer. She said, I don't agree with you. I know rabbis who are incredibly wise and incredibly good looking. No doubt she was thinking of, I mean, prior to that time, there was Shmuel Cohen Godel. He was so beautiful that when they killed him, the Romans skinned his face. The Roman emperor's daughter wanted, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that every 70 years, the Romans used to parade the mask of his face in the street in a parade, celebrating their dominion over us. But the point is, he was incredibly beautiful. The Gemara says that later, Rabbi Yochanan was so beautiful, that when he went to visit a friend of his who was ill and poverty-stricken in a dark house, Rabbi Yochanan rolled up his sleeve and lit the house. The incandescence of his beauty lit the house. And the two of them began crying, he and his friend, at the thought that this beauty would one day lie in the dust. So Rabbi Yochanan was incredibly beautiful. The Gemara says they used to put him outside the mikveh, so that the women on their way home, they would see, right? Yeah, we have tradition, a woman should not see an animal, she should see. And so to look up to Rabbi Yochanan's beauty, that would have something to do with the child they would conceive. Rabbi Yochanan was incredibly beautiful. So she said to the rabbi, Rabbi Shimon ben Chananya, you tell me you need to be ugly to be wise. I know rabbis who are very good looking and very wise too. And he said to her, yes, but he have a son, he have a gemiritve. He said to her, had they been ugly, they would have been wiser. In other words, despite the disadvantage of good looks, they managed to achieve wisdom. For me, it was easier. So, what do you learn from this? The Gemara is explicitly telling you that external beauty is problematic. That's what it's telling you. Right? The Gemara is teaching you how to understand the sugya of beauty, and it's telling you that external beauty is problematic. And here we have the same Torah praising Sarah, Rivka, Rachel for their great beauty. Avigail, so many examples. So we have a real problem and a real clash, and this is the Chanukah debate. This is the debate over external beauty and what it means. By the way, you know, we talked about aesthetics without lowering the tone of this conversation. The world of art today is conflicted. Modern culture is conflicted over the beauty of nakedness. The Greek exposing of the body in its nakedness. That's alive and well with us today, in case you haven't noticed. Right? And today they put up artworks which are the height of aesthetic beauty, which are presented in a way that the model who posed for that sculpture or painting, right, agreed to that. If she had to walk down the street like that, she'd probably rather die. I mean, I presume she'd rather die. I mean, I hope she'd rather die. What is going on? On the one hand, there's the shamefulness of the naked body. On the other hand, there's the beauty. The naked body is beautiful. There's no question it is. The naked body is beautiful. And you see it celebrated, its beauty celebrated in art. And yet there's a shame in the nakedness of the same culture that portrays beauty in that fashion. And the greatest artworks in the world portray the nakedness and the beautiful nakedness of the body. And the same culture has a shamefulness about it. What is going on? I think the answer is along these lines. Again, no time to work it out fully, but I think the direction is this. The direction is this. Let's go back to the beginning. At the origin of creation, when humans were created, the harmony between body and soul was so great that the body needed to be displayed naked. The Torah makes a point of telling you that Adam and Chava were naked, they weren't ashamed. What does it mean? The concept is, which Odessa explains this in great detail, when Adam and Chava were formed, the body was so loyal to the soul, the body, the vessel, was such a loyal container of the soul, that it portrayed the soul directly. When you looked at the guf, you saw the neshama. When you looked at the body, you saw the soul. The body was transparent. When you looked, first of all, we have to understand Adam and Chava didn't look the way we picture. Adam and Chava, the Medrash says, Adam was the size of the universe. Right? The Medrash says that after he sinned and was shrank and then died, yet even at that point, the light that shone from his heels was greater than the sun. The Gemara says, Rabbi Noah went in to measure the tombs, and when he saw, he was allowed to look at the heel of Adam HaRishon. After the sin and after death, the light that shone from his heels, and the heel is always the lowest point, the point that engages death, where the serpent bites, right? Ein rekev ba'akev, the Gemara says, because the heels are dead even when you're alive. That lowliest and death-filled part of the human being glowed greater than the sun. Adam and Chava were incandescent, they occupied the universe. If people ask you why the world as big as it is, why is the universe as big as it is? We occupy a tiny fraction of it. The answer is Adam occupied it all. Before Mi'ato, Hashem put his hand on him and shrank him. He was the size of the universe and he was luminescent with beauty. He had a body, when you looked at the body, you saw the neshama. That sort of a body doesn't need clothing. You know that the Gemara says that Reb Meir, ironically, Reb Meir, the one who shines, he's the one who said that Adam HaRishon was clothed in vessels of light, garments of light, kosmos or. Adam HaRishon was clothed in garments of light, Alav Vavresh. After the Chet, he became clothed in garments of or, Ayin Vavresh. There's a clothing Lashon Kodesh that when an Aleph becomes an Ayin, it represents a transition from spiritual to material. You'd like some work over Shabbos? Make yourself a list of words like Ayin and Ayin. Ayin and Ayin. Make yourself a list of words that begin with an Aleph, Afar and Afer. Right? Go through a list of those words and you'll notice from the transcendent and refined ethereal spiritual, you descend to the material when you replace the Aleph with an Ayin. Why? Not for now. But, or Aleph Vavresh means light. Ayin Vavresh, right? You know what happened was when Adam sinned, he covered himself with a fig leaf. Covered his nakedness with a fig leaf. Why figs? Also another subject. But figs. Hashem came and told him, you're making a mistake. You think that the function of clothing is to hide your nakedness, I'm going to teach you a lesson for all time. Instead of using clothes to hide your nakedness, use them to reveal your dignity. And he sewed him garments of covet. He sewed him garments of dignity and honor. Right? By the way, that's an illustration of a deeper principle. The problem must always become the solution. The solution is never something that wipes away the problem. The solution in Torah always must be the problem itself becomes the solution. Achdus Hashem requires that. And therefore, you think garments are here to hide your nakedness. I'm telling you they have another function. As they hide your nakedness, they must recreate your original dignity. Right? The purpose of a garment, when a king wears royal garments, the garments hide the king, but they reveal his royalty. Right? That's the point. The disadvantage of clothes is that now that you need an external vessel to reveal the inner dignity, now you get the problem of whether the clothes do that or not. The essential, the lowest level of a garment is, it's called levush. The Medaktikim say that spells lobosh. Levush means to not hide shame. But the higher level of garment is called a beged. Beged means treachery. Beged means treachery. Because when you wear a garment, right, in old English, in the 7th, 18th century, a traitor was called a turncoat. That was the old word for a traitor, a turncoat. He wears the garment of one, but he belongs to the other. When you wear a beged, you enter the zone of treachery, right? Because you're seeing the external, you hope it shows the internal. By the way, in Kabbalah, what's written is that Aleph is always the letter of the Neshama. Aleph is the letter of the Neshama. Right? Silent, it means one. The next three letters in creation are Beis Gimel Beged. First Hashem creates the Neshama. The next three letters in sequence are the vessel that contain it and give it a place to be in the world. That's Beged. So first he's clothed in garments of light. Aleph Vav Resh. And as soon as he sins, he needs to be clothed in garments of Ayin Vav Resh. What is Ayin Vav Resh? Or Iver, blind. It means blind. So first Adam is clothed in a garment of reveal. That means you look at the outside, you see the inside. And after the chet, the result is he becomes clothed in garments of Ayin Vav Resh. In English, a skin is called a hide. Where did they get that from? Somebody has a thick hide. It's a hide, it's Iver, it's Or Ayin Vav Resh, which is Iver, you no longer see. Now you look at the skin, you see the skin. Now you look at the outside, you see the outside. That's the tragedy and the travesty of human beauty. Is that when Adam Rishon was created, he had a body that was so obedient, a body that was so able to demonstrate the spirit, that when you looked at the body, you saw the neshama. That kind of body would be most insulted by putting garments on. That kind of beauty is the original beauty. That's the kind of beauty that manifests the perfect harmony between external and internal, vessel and content. And that sort of beauty is necessary. And of course it doesn't need clothing. But after the chet, when they're casting to the opposite balance, before the chet, the body is totally loyal to the neshama, and it shows, you looked at the body, see the neshama. Rav Dessler puts it like this. He says, when you looked at Adam Rishon, all you could see was the neshama. Exactly the opposite of the way that you look at a person now. Now you look at a human being, all you can see is the body. If you look very carefully, you can see the faint glow of a neshama on the face. We call it ziva poni. What is that? If you watch somebody die, I've had that experience many times. You watch someone die, there's a transition from the moment before death to a moment after death. Something leaves, a light leaves the face. But it's very subtle. It's very subtle. All you see is the body. It's very hard to see the neshama. When you looked at Adam Rishon, says Rav Dessler, you only saw the neshama. If you looked very hard, you could see the body. Imagine looking at a 1,000-watt electric bulb. You see the light. You look very carefully, you can make out the outlines of the glass. There was almost nothing of the body. After the chet, Adam Rishon chose to transition that into a situation where you look at the body, you see only the body. That kind of body needs to be hidden. That's problematic, that sort of body. You know, the way he puts it is like this. The Gemara says that the Yetzer, which is the body speaking for itself, is first like a passerby in the street, then he's like a beggar at the door, then he's like a guest in your home, and then if you're lucky, you remain a guest. What does it mean? You've been hijacked. You've been hijacked by the Yetzer. Right? He's sitting at home and he's... Shapiro once put it like this. He said that, what's the right way to rob a bank? You have to imagine him saying this. What's the right? You walk in with a motorcycle, a helmet, and a gun. That's not the sensible way to rob a bank. The right way to rob a bank is you make an appointment with the manager, you walk into his room, you lock the door behind you, you put a sock in his mouth, you tie him up, you lock him up in the cupboard, you sit at his desk, you run the bank. That's the intelligent way to rob a bank. That's been done to you by the Yetzer. The Yetzer's taken over, and when you say me, I, it's him talking. It's him talking. When you say, I'll do this, I'll do that, I think I'll do a mitzvah, it's him talking. Where's the real you? In a cupboard someplace, going, Ne'ilah, maybe. You know, Rav Dessler says this, when Adam thought of himself as I, he only meant neshama. First person, me, when he said I, he meant only neshama. Where was the guf? Speaking very distantly in the second person as a nafash. Would you like to taste the sin? Addressing him from a distance in the second person. After the chet, our first person consciousness becomes only the body. When you say I, you mean only your body. It's very humiliating, but it's obvious. When you're facing something delicious that you'd like to taste, which voice speaks? I'd like to taste that. Especially if we shouldn't. I'd like to taste that. And how does your conscience address you? No, you shouldn't. Very embarrassing. In all languages, it's like that. The lower, sensual, animal, childish, immature. Me, I'd like to do that. And the conscience addresses you in the second person from a distance. So there's been a total usurping, a total hijacking of the internal. You know, the Chazal says something amazing in the fifth perek in Sukkah. The Gemara says, what are the names of the Yetzer Hara? Many names of the Yetzer Hara. Seven names. One of the names is Hatzfoni. It's called the Tzfoni, the hidden one, the northern one, but it also means hidden. So Chazal said, because the Yetzer is hidden deeply within a human being. The Yetzer is hidden within a human being. When I saw that Chazal for the first time, I thought, what is going on? My Yetzer is not hidden. I know exactly where he is. I'm totally clear where he is. The first thing I do, open my eyes in the morning, he speaks to me loud and clear. He says to me, you know how cold it is out there? You know how tired you are? And he speaks loud and clear. I know exactly where he is. So Dessel explains, oh no, you don't. The one who thinks he knows where he is, the one making this assessment, who's so clear about where he is, it's him. It's him speaking. The real you is locked up someplace, half conscious, at the best of times. Right? He's hidden in plain sight. There's an old story. There's an old story, of a classic short story of the last century about a French courtesan who has a devastating letter in his possession that he needs to hide. If the French police find this, the government will collapse. And he knows that the minute he steps out of his apartment, they're going to search it. The chief of police has got a reputation. And he has to hide it in his apartment in Paris. And so he does, and he goes out, and he comes back 24 hours later, and he knows they've been through everything. He can tell they've lifted the floor, they've stripped the wallpaper, they've unstitched the hems of the curtains, they've done, and they haven't found it. And they know it's there. It turns out his friend comes to see him later when the whole thing blows over. He said, how did you hide it? He says, see this little letter, it's got a little letter holder on the wall with a few papers and a couple letters. It's the first letter. As the police walk in, they never look there. They never look there. They unstitch the curtains to find it. The place they never look is staring you in the face as you walk in. No intention was hidden in plain sight. That is what your Yetzer has done. That Sfeini is so hidden that you no longer know who the real you is. Anyway, that's a long story. But the point is that Adam HaRishon was constructed in such a way that there was no distinction between body and the body didn't need to be hidden. And the beauty of the naked body, nothing could have been more beautiful than that, because it represented the total harmony between vessel and content, between vehicle and rider. Right? The vehicle was totally disciplined vessel, or vehicle that the rider rides, the tzaddikim of the Merkava. And that's why IMRs were beautiful. They were beautiful in that way. The Gemara says they got back to the Imaris managed to supersede the curse of Chava. The curse of Chava didn't apply to them. They were able to go back into the original state where the body's beauty was in fact a reflection of the spiritual being. And the more beautiful the body was, the more it showed you of the neshama. That sort of a beauty is worth praising, right? You know, the sequence of events is that if you look at history for 6,000 years, you have the creation and 6,000 years before Mashiach. As the Gemara says, Sheshes Alofim, 6,000 years, Kaya Alma. We are 5776. We are late Arab Shabbos. That's where we are. We have the beauty of hindsight, having seen all the prophetic predictions having come true, except the final pre-Messianic ones. This is the late Arab Shabbos, where we are now. You can smell the challah cooking. It's time to put on your special clothes for Shabbat, which is another sugya of Begodim. But we are late on Arab Shabbos. If you go back in history 2,350 years, you get to a time when history closed. The first centuries of human history are called Gilui Ponim, Hashem revealed himself. Then you have Chanukah, Purim and Chanukah, and that's where the light faded. Right? Purim, Hashem begins to hide himself. There's a Megillah, but it doesn't mention Hashem's name. There's a Nes, but it's a hidden Nes. Right? There is Purim, meaning the luck of the draw. Purim is the time when Hashem goes into hiding. It's a debate whether it's Ruach HaKodesh or Nevuah or not. And 150 years later, you have Hanukkah where there's nothing at all. Nothing at all. Nothing. Not even a Megillah, not even a Mishnah, nothing. The only thing you have in Hanukkah is the last wave, goodbye of a miracle, which was nothing like the previous miracles. The Rambam says every miracle happened in the presence of a Novi. There were no Nevi'im at Hanukkah. It was after the war was won. It had nothing to do with saving the Jewish people. Only the Kohanim saw it in the Beis HaMikdash. It was a last wave goodbye from the world of miracles. And from then on, we see no Nisim Nigli. Hanukkah, Rav Putner calls the Yom Tov of Torah Sheba Al Peh. Torah Sheba Al Peh. First you have Torah Sheba Iksav, that's Nevuah. Now we move into Torah Sheba Al Peh. And in that transition, the body takes over so thoroughly that it's all you can see. What marks the transition? What marks the transition from Gilui, when Hashem reveals Himself, where there's still a possibility of the body demonstrating the neshama, to our world of Torah Shebaal Peh, where the body in no way can demonstrate the neshama? We look at a naked body now, you see only the naked body, and it's animal nature. What is the transition? A woman called Esther. And the Gemara has a debate about whether she was beautiful or not. Beautiful or not. According to one opinion, she was one of the four most beautiful women who ever lived. And according to other opinion, she had a green face. What kind of debate is this? According to one Shita, one of the four most beautiful women, Rachav, Sarah, Chava, Esther was one of those. And that's what attracted the king. According to another opinion, she had a great... One Medrash says she was 75 years old. 75, you understand, this is a Persian king. He's gathering virgins from the whole empire. And they bring the girls they brought to him must have been stunning. And then they pickled them in perfumes. I can imagine what they look like. And here he finds a lady, she's 75 years old, she's married already, with a green face. What was he thinking? What is the nature of this machlokes? The nature is, Esther's on the cusp of the disappearance of beauty. Esther means the hidden one. She transitions us into the phase of hiddenness. One side of the machlokes is she harks back to the beauty of the Emaris. The other side of the machlokes is she introduces the era where a woman's beauty is problematic. Essentially problematic. Where tznius becomes more of an issue. We could speak all day about this. Let me finish with this. The Gemara says, Chazal said that Sarah, Imenu, had more than one name. One of her names was Yiska. Yiska. Because everybody could see through her beauty. Soche in Hebrew means to see through. In Hebrew you have many words for see. Tzur, Mistakel, Mabit, Ro'eh, Sofe, many, many words. Soche means to see through, like Sukkah. Sukkah means you see through it. The idea of the Schach, which is the sherish of the Sukkah, is you see through it. That's the idea. You see the stars, you have to see through it. It's transparency, it's Ashgacha, you see it. Right to Emuna, that's a Sukkah. Soche means to see through. I call sochin beyofya. What does it mean to see through a woman's beauty? It means that Sarah, with her provocative beauty, with the kind of beauty that was great enough to make Egyptians ready to kill, she presented herself with a refinement and a dignity that when you looked at her, instead of seeing the animal, which the provocative beauty of a woman can do, you saw Malach. You looked at her, you saw Hashem. That's sneers. Sneers doesn't mean that you make yourself look ugly. Some ladies think sneers makes you. Means you have to make yourself look like something the cat dragged in. That's not sneers, that's just ugly. Sneers doesn't mean you look ugly. Sneers means you present yourself with the same refinement. You take that sensual, provocative beauty that could make an Egyptian kill, and you present that with a kind of refinement and dignity that when a person looks at you, instead of seeing the animal, they see the divine. That's sneers. That's to see through a woman's beauty. That's what we mean by sneers. And that's what sneers isn't only the length of a skirt or the length of a sleeve, it's everything. It's perfume. Some women, they wear so much perfume, they walk into a room, half the men fall over anesthetized, you have to call it solid. That's not sneers. Sneers is it's a deportment, it's a dignity, it's a presentation, it's a speech, it's a... And it doesn't mean to hide it. It means to hide the provocative of an animal. And to do that, you wear the garments that show the inter. And therefore, that's the pattern of history. We hark back to a beginning, where nakedness was the ultimate beauty. And of course the naked body is beautiful. And of course there's a premonition of that. Of course it has to be that way. Right? The beauty of the creation doesn't need to be hidden. The external beauty of the world is there to show the internal beauty of Kedusha and the Neshama. Of course it had to be there. But as we progress in history, and we damage that relationship, and we give ascendancy to the body, and the more we demonstrate the body, the less we're able to see the Neshama. Sneers becomes a greater art. To do that. Aymas were able to hark back to a time before the Chet of Chavan. That's what the Torah is talking about. And therefore, in summary, as we move through this month in the darkness of winter towards the Hanukkah showdown, that is the issue. The Greeks are telling us that the body must be displayed. It is beautiful. And they're right in essence. They are right, but not this time of history. This time of history, the more you demonstrate the body, the more you show the body, and the less you show the neshama. And our version of tznius is not because we're prudish and we don't appreciate the beauty of the body, but we try to present it with a dignity that makes the body demonstrate the neshama.